Men on Board, Episode 3. Today, the category is city building. We're going to be talking about suburbia and Quadropolis. Then we're going to have a broader view discussion about selecting the right complexity level of game for your group. Hello, and thank you for downloading Men on Board. I am Aaron.
I'm Josh.
Jameson.
And Matt.
And we are a podcast where we are going to talk to you about board games. Two, in fact, that are going to come from a certain category. Then we're going to do a little bit of compare and contrast, and we'll end up taking a step back and doing a little broader view discussion. Today's category is city building, and I love city building. I remember playing SimCity back on the SNES, and to this day, I probably have hundreds of hours logged on Steam playing City Skylines.
SimCity was on the SNES?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I remember going, I didn't have it, and there was someone I was friends with only because he had it, and I used to play it at his house.
I don't know if I've ever played a full city building game.
They're not my favorite genre of video game. My partner Chris loves them. For hours he will play.
Everything I play is like pared down. Mm-hmm. I like playing The Sims because I like making a house.
Yeah.
I like theme park. Mm-hmm. Like Roller Coaster Tycoon. Because you're fantastic. In a specific area of the town. Theme Hospital, that was my favorite game ever. You made a hospital and people would come in with like ridiculous diseases and you'd have to treat them. Like they'd have inflated head and you'd have to make a little piece of equipment that actually popped their head and inflated it back up to normal size.
Never even heard
but
of that
I
game,
like
but
my city
amazing.
Building on a lower level. I don't think I've ever played a game where you make a full city.
I love that level. I love the macro level. I love the micro level. Any kind of sim or management game, I have probably played it.
I like the one that got a little RTS-y. Like, what was that? It was like a Roman city building game.
And oh, I know.
It wasn't.
Not Age of Empires, but.
No. Exactly. I also played a lot of Age of Empires. Yeah. But this was all city management. Like, okay, you have to have your water flow over here. Here's some wells.
I had an Egyptian game that was like that you like build along the Nile and it would flood and not flood. Uh-huh. And you'd have to like upgrade your buildings and people would get pissed off because the god they liked had a temple too far away.
Yeah, Set is okay. We're getting way off.
No, it's fine. I mean, I think that's city building. It brings back memories. We played at
good game.
A strong nostalgia point.
Yeah.
If this is your first time listening, we are not a video game podcast.
Nah.
We are a board game podcast that frequently goes on tangents and never really covers any real ground. I'm going to be starting us off today with a little introduction to the game Quadropolis. Quadropolis is yet another game from our favorite publisher, Days of Wonder, or one of our favorite publishers, Days of Wonder. This one came out in 2016, designed by Francois Gandin, art by Cyril Dewan and Sabrina Miramon. Quadropolis is a city-building game. In fact, everyone that's playing is the mayor of a city, and you're hiring architects to build buildings. This is done by tile selection and tile placement of building tiles. Each building scores differently. There's a couple different types of buildings, 6 to 8 approximately. And the winner is whoever has the highest number of points at the end of the game. The game is played over a series of rounds. Each round, there is a central board with all of the buildings that are available to be selected. Each player has their own city board with kind of a grid layout. Each of the architects has a number associated with that, and that controls which tile can be selected and where the tile is placed. For instance, if you have architect with value 2, you're going to place that along any of the 4 sides of the board and select the second tile in. At that point, you are limited to put that tile on your personal board on either the 2 section, the 2 row, or the 2 column. Certain tiles will give you energy or inhabitants. These are little red crystals or little blue meeples, and they can be used to power other tiles. But if you end up with any excess at the end of the game, they will count as negative points. After the final round, points are tallied and the winner is determined. The game has a classic and expert mode that will play a little bit different. In the classic mode, you're going to only have a certain number of architects. You're going to have a little bit of a different board layout. And you're going to play one less round as well as having a few less building types that are available in the expert mode. And that is Quadropolis.
So I hadn't played this game in a while. And to prepare myself for this podcast, I made my partner play it with me last night. And I forgot, I actually do really enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's Jameson's just throwing the pieces everywhere.
Throwing pieces everywhere.
But anyway, while he picks things up and probably bumps his mic as he comes back up. Yeah, I think it's really clever. It is very simple. It is a light game, by all means. When I pre-ordered this and looked at the Days of Wonder release for that year, and I heard it was a city-building game, I was like, oh, this will be great, because it'll be sort of cartoony, but with a little more weight to it. And I don't feel this game has this at all. In fact, I would almost say this isn't what I consider a traditional city-building game in any way, shape, or form. It feels much more puzzly and points min-maxing to me.
I just want to throw this out there. Aaron mentioned that there's a classic and an expert mode to this game. I think those terms are a little misleading. If you are a very intro-level player, I think the words classic and expert are right. But if you've played it, if you're even a slightly better than intro level player, it's like easy and normal mode. It's not, it's in no way expert. It is a very easy mode and then a normal, still light secondary mode.
I think that's a fair way to characterize it. I do really like the artwork in the easy mode. Classic. And I do think that, like, that is one of the few things that I think is a distinct loss moving into what we think of as the normal way to play.
Yeah, I think this goes back to with the classic and the expert of how we've talked about Days of Wonder in the past, that they do kind of go to either the medium weight to slightly lighter weight games, but we still love them.
I appreciate that there's a classic and expert mode in this game, though, because I think it gives it a little more versatility than some other games mm-hmm. in my collection. I can bring this game out for very, very new gamers. I think I taught it to my neighbors and they went out and bought it because they liked it and it was novel to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they taught themselves the expert mode, which I was like, that's great. You're like, you've learned this on your own. That's really cool. Personally, I don't enjoy the classic mode very much. I find it really limiting and not worth playing again. But if I have people that aren't really gamers, I would feel comfortable bringing that to them and at least showing it to them.
Yeah, this is a game where I personally really enjoy this. At the table, I'm one of the more positive people toward it. This is a game where I think if I bought it, I would share it with my mom or my dad. You know, somebody who doesn't traditionally play games at the same level of complexity that we do. It's the kind of thing where, and I could still get satisfaction out of it. I got ridiculed by this group recently for saying that I could have fun playing Clue. I think this is the same. I can have fun playing classic Quadropolis with my mom.
I'm with you there on that. I think between the two games we talk about today, if I owned Quadropolis, I think it would get to the table every so often. I don't think I would be the one suggesting it bringing to the table, like, oh, I'm in the mood to play Quadropolis, but if I brought it home to my family, it was something I would bring home to my family. It's something that if I was sitting with someone who didn't particularly like games but wanted to try one, it's something I could pull off the shelf and be like, oh, let's throw this to the table and let you play.
Riffing off of something that Josh said a little while ago, this is not a game that's about building cities. It is a game where the theme of city building has been pasted on to, and pretty effectively, I think, a sort of tile matching and planning game. The sort of the central mechanic, at least in the expert mode, is essentially picking how far in to, there's this big grid of 5x5 tiles, and using the architects in a way that denies potentially useful spacings to your opponents, lets you lock in stuff where you want those things to go. Like the act of assigning a tile from the communal pool to your board, the strategy of making that happen and planning ahead to let that happen again in the future is the biggest part of this game. Wherein a lot of city building games, like sort of the traditional and more thematic ones, physically taking the building and putting it on your board, that isn't the chore. The chore is making everything work together once it gets there.
And the management aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah. And there's still some of that in this game. Like, you still want things to make certain patterns. That's really important. You're not just moving stuff over haphazardly. Mm-hmm. But just setting things up is where all of the satisfaction is in this game.
I think you're right. I think you could paint the different color tiles just purely different colors and have the rules be blue buildings like to be next to green buildings, and that's what it is. But they do a good job of theming the green buildings to be parks and then saying they like being next to the yellow buildings because the yellow buildings are residential, and they don't like being next to this color because of what that color is.
Right. And going along with that, the other thing that helps that is the resources the buildings produce. Like, industrial buildings give you power, whereas, you know, residential buildings give you population, and each one wants a different thing. I personally don't find the resources that interesting in this game, and for some reason playing this game, I've never had an issue filling the resource requirements for any of the building. It's rare that you have that big of a problem with it, which feels un-city builder like to me. I feel like that's, there should be a lot more tension around that in a game.
I think the resources can be as deep or shallow as you want them to be. I played this game pretty recently with Aaron, and this past game, more than anyone else, mostly because I had the first player turn at the beginning and then kept that momentum going forward, I was approaching the game from a perspective of not what pattern can I build, but I'm the first person to pick this round. What is the most valuable tile in a vacuum? So I kept on taking high resource tiles, and that informed my strategy going forward because I was thinking, okay, now I have this massive pile of people. I'm going to use a strategy that really maximizes my access to power and to people. And so, and I actually think I played it pretty much perfectly. I was really deliberate the whole way through the game with like squeezing as many human beings as I could out of these buildings, getting exactly the right amount of power to fill these convenience stores so that I could pack people in. And it actually kind of like it enhanced the theme that was there. And I think there's a couple little things in this game that do that, that do reinforce the theme. It isn't quite as... The theme does kind of belong here. Another one is stacking residential buildings and stacking skyscrapers. Mm. And there is still that idea, even though it's still very much about the lining up the positioning and making the transfer from the communal board onto your own one. Even though that mechanic is still in focus, the fact that you are physically piling buildings on top of each other to form skyscrapers or apartments is thematic.
Yeah, I think the theme you speak to, and looking at the two games, it just kind of dawned on me, we could probably use different words to describe these games. City building encompasses a big umbrella. Quadropolis is literally city building.
Mm-hmm.
The point of the game is to actually just construct the buildings and construct the buildings where they want to be. While I think more traditionally, when we say city building, we really mean city planning and city management.
That's a really good point.
That this... Because we're using architects, because it's all about where you're placing, it is city building purely to what those two words mean.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And not more about the management, which I think when we get into suburbia, we'll get into more of that. It's a city management game and a city planning game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The things that I really like about this game are actually some of the, and this is a little bit different for me, some of the less thematic and more mechanic aspects of it.
Yeah. I'm with you 100%.
No, I am too. The puzzle of the architects and picking the number, because like you'll see a tile that comes out that you really, really want and really, really need in your city. But then when you're playing in expert mode, there's a pool of architects and you'll go to like get it. But then where you need it in the city, you might not be able to get the tile with that number. Or if you can get it with that number might not be available for you to get it with.
Or and some then, evil thing is standing on there and you're not allowed to point at it.
Yeah, and then sometimes there's a little master architect that moves around the board and it might get into a way that you can never point your architect at the master architect and it blocks you. And it's a really, really fun puzzle.
I love drafting mechanics, and this is essentially an open information drafting mechanic with what I like most, which is when you have multiple chances at the same pool. So there's some drafting games where everybody will basically take one card from a selection and then pass it, and they'll never see that choice again. They'll never see that menu again. This, you constantly have the same menu, so you need to be thinking down the line, but the menu itself is constantly dwindling. And I really, really like the architect mechanic in this game. It just so happens that the theme of being an actual architect sort of works, but I think I, in much the same way as I keep on thinking of Splendor whenever I play this game, even though they don't have a lot in common, but the mechanics for it are just really satisfying for me.
Yeah, I'm going to jump on the bandwagon there. I like the pulling the buildings and the jumping around the table multiple times to pull from the same pile, because you're like, oh, my first time, I'm going to get exactly what I want. But as the turns go on with that round, the board gets smaller and smaller, so you have to tweak your strategy a little bit to make the best use out of your turn still.
I say, and your map gets fuller and fuller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really like that this is a game where you do have to pay attention to your neighbors because someone can run away with the game.
Yeah.
If only one person is getting the harbors, they're probably going to win.
This happened in the last game I played with Aaron, that someone's board was just all the harbors. Going off that point, what I like about it, it is really easy to look at the other players' boards and to know exactly what's going on, because the art is so uniform and bold that I just need to be able to look completely across the table to Jameson's board, and I can just tell he's got a lot of this building, he's got a lot of this building, and I don't need to ask him what the buildings are. I don't need to like get up and really examine his board. You can just see it, and I really like that in a game where I don't have to struggle to interpret another player's board.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think the game encourages you to play differently than your neighbors. I think if you find you're playing the same as your neighbor, you're going to be in a lot of potentially unnecessary competition for the same buildings where someone else who's pursuing a different strategy has monopolized that market, and they're just able to go free.
That's the game I played with Aaron. Mm-hmm. Him and I played. Our boards looked almost identical. While one person went harbor heavy, one person went skyscraper heavy. And when it came down to points, I think I edged Aaron out on something. But our boards were very, very similar, and it made it hard for us to look and be like, which one of us is going to really eke it out in the end? And neither of us won.
Yeah, then the Harbor City is the one that crushed us.
I do like the round setup, too. I think they did a very good job of just putting a little insert that has all the tiles that you just take out, put in a bag, and lay down. Mm-hmm. It takes a little bit of time, but I find it's really fast. You throw them down, flip them over, and you're good to go.
The fact that it's spread out over multiple rounds makes the setup not as painful, while if you've listened to our last episode talking about Five Tribes, the fact that the setup in that game happens all at once makes it feel a little more painful.
Yeah, because this one's just getting 25 tiles and putting them down on the board. I will say when you're playing with less than four players, you're still putting out all those 25 tiles, but there's some that you'll put face down, which can be, I mean, it adds like an extra, 15
Two seconds. That is one of my criticisms for the game, though. I do think that in two-player and three-player games, you don't have full access to everything. Notably in two-player games, there's only 6 or 8 office buildings that come out. So you're capped at how many you're possibly going to be able to score, even if you get all of those buildings. Or I'm sorry, there's 2 per round, so I guess there's 10 is the most that you could ever get in offices in a two-player game. And that's always the same because there are always those expert tiles that are marked that way. So it would be nice to see a little variation there, just and maybe to change up each round by round. But maybe some people like knowing exactly where their points are able to come from and be guaranteed that.
This game, I actually really like the fact that there is that classic mode and that expert mode. I mean, I played classic mode the very first time I played this and then haven't looked back just because the expert mode has all the meat that I want for a medium weight game. But going back to what Josh said at the very beginning, the classic mode is an excellent gateway game. It's a really good game that you can have someone that's never played a hobby board game before, sit them down in the classic mode, and this will be one of those kind of ticket to ride, blow your mind for the first time you're playing a hobby board game.
It's also, the classic mode is tense in its own way too, because there are only 5 categories of scoring. You can't diversify it as much. You need to max everything that you're doing. If you're not doing the best of something, you're not going to win the classic mode.
So also the same with the architects, because you have a fixed pool of architects.
Correct.
You have to be way more flexible in what you can do, because if you get stuck with your architect that only has number one on it, the tiles you're going to be able to pull from are so low, and you just have to make it work.
James, I just really like this.
Really, he looked really deep in thought.
No, I can't see Jameson, but he was just a classic like thinker pose.
I just love this game so much. I might honestly buy it. I have no reason to buy it except to like play with my family, basically, because everybody in this group already owns it. But what's the MSRP on this game?
Thanks, Jameson. This actually, it's not my game. This is your game to talk about. I don't have this one on my piece of paper.
I believe it's about $60. The MSRP on this one is $49.99. It's under the Asmodee MAPP. Mm-hmm. So I believe you can get it online for like $42-ish.
Yeah. So anybody who knows me or has been listening to this podcast for long enough for it to make a difference knows that I hate buying games. I hate buying anything, really. I just don't really spend money on that kind of thing unless I really want to keep it around forever because I hate waste. I may buy this, even though you guys already have it.
I didn't know you liked this game that much.
That's I really cool. like it.
I'll play it with you sometime. I like it, too.
I don't think I'd buy this game for myself, but come Christmas time, the fact that my family has my copy of the original Ticket to Ride and they actually play it without me there, it would totally be a game that I would either buy for one of my little brothers to have around or tell my mom to go out and be like, you guys should add this to your Ticket to Ride. I think you guys would play this as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually surprised you guys don't have it because it seems like a game John Michael would like.
No, he didn't. He found it way too simple. Okay. He didn't enjoy it.
That makes sense.
We went because we rented it, I think, before any of you bought it.
Maybe.
And we weren't fans of it.
I remember that. Yeah.
And he just found it too simple.
How are the colors in this one?
Colors, looking at the tiles, I didn't ask a colorblind friend about this one because I don't think either of them have played it.
Mm.
Looking at the tiles, I think there's a lot of problems with the shading of the tiles are probably going to look really similar. However, each building type is so unique in its artwork and the symbol that's in the corner that there would be no difficulty in playing the game because you could look at the tiles and just tell them apart as to which tile is what. They're just, the iconography is so easy to read that even if the coloring was similar, there was no problem.
What is our other game today?
So I'm bringing you Suburbia. It was published in 2012 by Bezier Games. It is a Ted Alsbach game. He's also the artist, the first artist listed on the game as well. It is a city, an actual city building and planning and management game. The main thing you're trying to do in the game is balance your population level and your reputation level, because at the end of the game, whoever has the most people that visits their town wins the game. I'm saying reputation. I believe it's income. I think you're balancing population and income.
No, it's your reputation is what brings in the people to your city.
And reputation are the same category, and income is the other category. Well,
they're like reflective. Like yeah. One influences the other.
I just played this game the other day, and apparently I didn't pay attention to any of the terminology. Anyway, at the end of each turn, you earn a number of people equal to your reputation level. People is points. And then you get a number of income each round, which helps you buy more buildings in the future. So it's all about balancing those levels, because the further you progress on the population track, you start losing reputation and income. So you need to keep coming up with ways to bolster that back up so you accumulate more as you go through. The way you actually play the game is each round you buy a building from the middle of the table, and each one has a price printed on it and also has a board that adds more price to it, because the longer a tile is out, the cheaper it becomes, while new buildings tend to be more expensive as you go through. I think the buildings in this game only come in four colors. I think there's blue, gray, yellow, and green. For colorblind people, I think it's perfectly fine. When you take the buildings, you must add them to your little display. They're all hex tiles. They have to be connected to each other as you lay them. And then the actual meat of the game comes in, because every time you place a building, I think the checklist is like seven steps long if you actually go through it and don't just quickly jump around, because you have to check the effects that the tile immediately gives you, which... pretty much everything has effects to either your current amount of money, your income level, or your reputation level. And it just shifts those three things in different ways. But you have to check the tile itself when it's placed, its neighboring tiles when it's placed, its non-neighboring tiles when it's placed, if it has a positive effect for everyone else at the table, and if it has a negative effect for everyone else at the table. And that's it. Mm-hmm. The meat of the game is just going through all of those effects that trigger once you add the tile to the building.
So before we even start getting into this game, I only got the expansion or the expansions not that long ago, and I was unpackaging them because I wanted to try them before we did the game, or we were playing this game again for the episode. But I read through the special thanks on the first expansion, and Ted Alsbach put in a shout out to Kesha, spelling her name with the dollar sign and thanking her for being such a good role model. I mean, even if it was being completely sarcastic, it really just raised my appreciation of Ted Alsbach.
I got a picture of this as a text message when this was discovered.
It made my day.
It's really nice.
It makes me think he's a fun guy to hang out with.
When did he release the expansion?
2013.
One of the things I really like and is a positive and a negative for me in this game is that when you place a tile, it has influences on your neighbors, both positive and negative. What I don't like about it is it is very hard in this game to read your opponent's boards. You can't look at your opponent's board and know what's there. I understand that that is offset by the fact in the rules of if you check off every step, you announce out loud every single time you place a tile what kind of tile you placed, to see if your opponents have anything that react to it. And eventually you remember which effects trigger your opponents. However, you can't really just look at your opponent's board and see, oh, you have the airport thing over there, so I shouldn't put airports. You have this thing over there for when I place this. You can't tell the tiles apart when you just look at each other's boards.
Yeah, this is absolutely a game that you have to stay engaged in, because if you're not really paying attention to what other people are doing and just letting them buy things without really caring what they're doing, you're not going to really know what else is going on. We played this last night, actually, with a couple other people, and we were really, really involved in each person's suburb, probably a little bit too much, and putting a little bit too much emphasis on the theme of it and the places we were building. But I could have told you what every single tile they had and actually knew how my tiles were going to affect them. It was a really fun game.
So I played this with Aaron two nights ago, and none of my tiles had any were impacted at all by anything that any other player did. So for me, it was more just noticing, like, he's getting a little big for his britches over there with all those residentials. Oh, she's going for this over here again. Nobody's buying restaurants, even though farms are all over the place. Now I really need some farms. So, like, there was this flow, and I was certainly paying attention to the flow of the table, but my strategy definitely wasn't impacted by specific choices that other people were making. So I didn't feel like that level of engagement was necessary. But I can see with a slightly different configuration how it might be. And definitely what Aaron said about being engaged and having to stay engaged definitely makes sense. I would kind of think of it as a plus for this game.
That's fair. I played this game three nights ago.
I just realized that Aaron had played this game three different nights in a row with each of us on a different night.
This is because I care about our listeners.
You're also the one that owns the game. But no, I see what you're saying, Jameson, and I would agree completely. I don't think I have to care about my other neighbors in this game too much. I sort of plan my own city, and I know the game wants me to care. I really don't, though. I mean, I won the game that we played, and I had no idea what you guys were doing in any way, shape, or form. I just had my little engine, made things work for me, and that was it.
I'm with Josh on this. I think it's possible for you to just make your own engine and live perfectly fine without knowing what your neighbor's doing. For me and my personal taste, this game is very visually boring, and I think thematically on this drier end, so it is very hard for me to stay engaged while other people are doing their things, because I don't want to look at the tiles because they're dull. And I don't want to read all the text that's printed on the tile, because there's a lot of text printed on the tile, and it's so small that I feel myself checking out more than I should be because I need to be engaged.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair criticism. I think this game, I love it so much just because I do love those city building games, and I love SimCity. I love City Skylines, and I like just imagining my city as it's growing and what's going to happen next, and like, what's like my new part of the city going to be, and how's that going to interact with the old parts, and like thinking about all the advantages. And I like looking at the other people's cities because I do the same thing with them. I will agree that it is, I mean, it's a little bit of an older game, so the graphic style,
it is 2012.
Well, but think about how many games we play per year. Like, think about how many new games that come out. Think about how different, because
I understand graphic design has changed, but it's not even that it needs to be flashier. It's just extra dull, and it's like coloration.
It is,
but
named suburbia.
But think about back in, especially when we, going back to Days of Wonder, as always, but that first Days of Wonder game would come out, and the components were so much better than the other components of the time.
But I'll challenge it with, like, Seven Wonders is from like 2009, 2010, and that artwork is still engaging today.
I agree.
So it's not like there wasn't engaging artwork games going back that far.
I agree. I just don't think it was as important back then as it is today. I think now, in order for you to get noticed, as there's more games that come out, because there's way more games that come out now than there was 5 years ago.
I agree with that 100%, that you need to be flashier to get people's attention. But just talking about this game itself, the art is a detriment to my experience within the game itself, not just attracting me to buying the game.
I agree with that. I'm just saying that we're looking at it from the standpoint, and I completely disagree with you that you guys don't, that 5 years ago was the same as today, because 5 years ago was a very different time.
No, I don't think either of us said that, but I think you're neglecting the fact that 5 years ago there were also really good looking games Like, it wasn't that hard to make a hex-based game that looked good. It's probably the same time Small World came out, for goodness sakes.
But again, that's going back to, that's how Days of Wonder got on the map for me, is because their games were head and shoulders above all the other games.
I don't know. I think it's dry.
I just think that that is something that was more commonly accepted 5 years ago, and now we're just used to a higher standard.
This reminds me of Race for the Galaxy style-wise, but I like Race for the Galaxy more. Even with the iconography and the text-heavy cards, I still think Race for the Galaxy looks better, and I'm more engaged with it than I am with this game.
I don't think it would be unreasonable to say that this game would benefit from just a new printing, a facelift visually. I personally remained really engaged with this game. One of the things that, and I wanted to swing back to the sort of the theme of it, like, a lot of what kept me engaged wasn't the actual components in front of me. It wasn't the kind of like, it wasn't the 10 and 5 and 1 piece money things, which were, you know, fun to play with, but not really particularly special or engaging. It was imagining my weird dystopian hellhole where on one half I had like a toxic waste plant, and then like it was kind of blocked off by some lawyers, and then next to the lawyers were some PR people. And then on the other side of my suburb was this like lush, just sort of this fantasy land where all these rich people lived. It was just a really fun, like, my imagination is what made it special. The components didn't so much.
See, I want this game to engage my imagination. I would love if I had that kind of a story to my city. But for some reason in this game, I don't have that at all. I just see colored hexes that score me points.
I am 100% with you. I don't think I ever pay attention to the name of the building I'm making. I just look at the text that's written at the bottom and how it corresponds to the other text near. I get it. It thematically matches the name of the building. I don't care what the name of the building is. I just want the effect bonus.
Yeah, I'm completely 180 degrees against that. And I think it just goes to, I like this theme more than you guys like this theme. Like, I like thinking about cities and city planning more than you guys like it. And I think that the way the tiles, the names of the tiles, what their effects are, how they all interact, I think it's so on theme. Like, the things that will give you income and why they give you income and how they interact with each other. There's a lot of thought that went into this game.
Absolutely.
And I think...
Absolutely.
And I would love to know if it was, okay, I want to make this building, so what should its mechanics be? Or if it's, okay, this would be a good mechanic, what should its theme be? Like, because either way, it comes out to a great spot.
I do just think, though, that, like, if the artwork in this had the punch of Quadropolis, I would probably enjoy it more. Like, and one of the things that, I mean, even speaking to when we talked about Quadropolis a minute ago, one of the things that I like about the, quote, classic, unquote, Quadropolis is just how fun and distinct the art is for the individual players, which you lose when you go to the sort of communal pool, which I think is probably a better mechanic. In the same route, I think Suburbia, I would probably get more joy out of it if it had updated visuals and probably updated components as well.
Something really simple about the art design that I didn't realize till earlier this week is that the streets are all the same on each of them, so that it does come out with like a grid design of the streets. I just find that neat.
The fact that I loved this when Aaron pointed it out, and that as far as I can tell, everybody else was super indifferent, is probably a good sign of different audiences.
I do like the goals in it. I like communal goals. That is the one thing I will say. It was very easy to look across the boards and be like, someone is winning the green goal, and someone is winning the lake goal, and someone has the most of this. Like that. But I had a general idea of what was going on around me, but it was mostly just to make sure I got at least one of the goals. I didn't feel like I had that much choice to impact them. And I mean, you get a secret goal dealt to you, and you get to pick. So that's kind of nice. I think, though, for a number of us, one of our secret goals directly contradicted one of the communal goals. So the choice was kind of made for us in that respect. But I do think those goals and I guess what I'm missing in this game maybe is milestones. I want to feel like I've like upgraded my city. I like that moment like Age of Empires when you switch from the Bronze Age to the Steel Age, or you've gone that. And this game doesn't have it for me. The closest thing you get is going from the A tiles to the B tiles to the C tiles, and there's like one scoring opportunity before each one. It doesn't feel like the buildings get vastly different to me. I know they do, and they get more expensive, but I don't feel like it changes enough for me to have an interest in it.
I don't know if this got mentioned in the overview. There is the sort of the doubling down mechanic.
Oh, no. I'm...
And this is something where I think potentially if they had put a little bit more of a veneer on it, it would be even more interesting. I ended up, correct me if I'm wrong, I ended up winning the game that we played, Aaron, in large part because I did a double down on this beach that I had built and got just a gigantic amount of victory points toward the end based entirely on just getting the bonus again. And if I had done it a little bit earlier, it would have been even bigger for me. The reason why it didn't occur to me to do it earlier is because the only representation of it in the game is this little cardboard tile with a 2X on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where if it instead were like you go from a suburb to a borough to a what, like if there were a little bit more theme just punched into that.
Yeah.
If you had like some kind of player aid that made it exciting and put an actual name on it, that would be the kind of thing that would make this game even better. And I don't think that this is like a fundamentally flawed game that has great points. I think it's a great game that could just be better than what it is.
When I play this game, all I want to do is go play Castles of Mad King Ludwig. Like that's all this game inspires me with, because what I'm missing is the different theme
mm-hmm.
and the visual punch.
Yeah.
I think what you do in the game is great. All the mechanics in the game are fantastic. But it just makes me want to go play a different game with a different skin on it.
I like that one as well.
I feel like this is going to, I don't want to completely train wreck the whole conversation. I don't see a huge visual difference between the tiles in Castles of Mad King Ludwig and the hexes in this game.
It's the variety of colors, and the colors are just a little more saturated.
It's like 8 colors versus 4, though.
But that's there's double, also distinct, that's there's double the icon. Amount of colors. Yeah. They are definitely more saturated. The colors are more saturated in Castles, and the colors are also throughout the whole tile. While these tiles towards the middle of the tile, because of the text and the artwork, it's not like the whole tile is brightly green. While in Castles, like the purple tiles are really purple because you don't need to read anything on them. They're really purple.
I guess. And the only thing I would say is they're colored, but then they're also much more generic because they're just rooms versus these ones are different types of buildings or
but they're different shapes.
But in that game you get the different shapes.
Yeah.
Aren't they? That's where we're going with, then okay.
No, but you get to auction them too. Like you get to price.
Well, but then that's going to mechanics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay, so I haven't actually played Castles of Mad King Ludwig, but Shelley has, and I've talked to her a lot about it because it really made an impression on her. Isn't like a whole big part of that there are special rooms such as a buttery or whatever? Yeah. Doesn't that kind of thing add a lot to the texture that we're talking about?
They are all specific.
Yeah.
But they don't have specific effects.
Oh, okay.
The colors of each room are all that matters, not the name of the room.
So
the name of the room is purely thematic. Like if your food room is a kitchen versus a buttery, this size is going to be different because a kitchen's bigger than a buttery, but it doesn't offer you any different effect. The two yellow rooms do the same thing.
Okay. Cause that's something I actually like in Suburbia, is that like the law firm did something very specific. Tie broke litigation.
It ruled.
The PR firm. Yeah. The specifically named things. I know they didn't matter at all to you. Like, to you, Matt, they just kind of boiled down into mechanical effects.
Right.
But I feel like the names actually were thematically appropriate for the effects.
I 100% agree with that. I just don't, it just doesn't just interest me. Yeah.
Yeah.
The names are there, and we're splitting hairs a lot. I think comparing one of his other designs, what I don't appreciate this game is that I do feel that there's a bit of management involved, and I don't enjoy it. I think an app could play this game fantastically.
I have the app. There's a really good iOS game.
There would have to be.
It's plays well on iOS.
But I just think it's a lot of... I mean, I don't mind calculation in games. I just feel like it's going... It's the fact that you can go back and score the same tile again for different things. I like... If I build something, I want to be done with it. I want to move on and not care again. But you're constantly reevaluating every space on your map.
It is an extremely fiddly game.
Yeah. It doesn't feel difficult or challenging to do. It's just not enjoyable to me. Building something else next to another lake is like, okay, I got a couple more points because this tile happens to be here. I know that's a huge part of the game. It just didn't work for me as well in this game. Maybe I just didn't feel like micromanaging that day. And in all fairness, I'm not crazy about city building games because I hate the management stage. I'm that person that plays the game, builds things, and then never plays with it again. I just want to put the cheat code in for free money, build a fun thing, and then walk away.
All right. So now that we did the bonus segment of the comparison of this between Castles of Mad King Ludwig, how does this game compare to Quadropolis for us in terms of city building games?
I think what I said earlier is my point. I think you're doing two different aspects.
Yeah.
One is purely about building the tile in the right spot and picking it out of the quarry from the right spot. And the other building is managing, you know, your reputation versus your income and balancing those levels for things.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't dislike either game. I think Quadropolis is more fun to play for me. I like playing that game. It's a different game experience, but I would pick Quadropolis over Suburbia. But I don't disagree that Suburbia feels much more like playing, planning, and building a city than Quadropolis does.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I enjoy the game Quadropolis more than I enjoy Suburbia.
I think the digestibility of Quadropolis is a big advantage, too. I mean, there is a big difference between a game you play in 60 minutes and a game you play in 90. Or if you're brand new, a game you play in, I don't know, 70 versus 120. The fact that you could potentially play like three back-to-back games of Quadropolis in a night if you were having a great time, or you could use it as a filler game if you had people who were already familiar with it and didn't need to be brought up on the rules, and that you still get what I personally feel is a pretty satisfying mechanical experience, even though it is extremely simple, is a big advantage in my book.
Yeah, I think compared to some of our other episodes and episodes that will definitely be coming in the future, I think a lot we can very easily pick one game over the other in terms of this game's better, we like this game better. I think with this comparison, it's much more a matter of taste,
mm-hmm. yeah,
absolutely. and a more finickiness to which game we pick
mm-hmm.
over the other. And I think maybe it's because we are comparing a game on a kind of paste on theme
mm-hmm.
and that have drastically different mechanics and way you play that you could own both these games and have them not scratch the mm-hmm. same itch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree
with that.
That's
true. Do you have any other ideas of city builders that you like throwing out there? We talked about this a little bit.
So
going on,
what's our difference? And then this is a little bit more bonus content between city building and civilization building.
I think city building involves some sort of tile-ish placement, and the way you place them in relation to each other
mm-hmm.
is important. While civ building tends to be a lot of a mixture of some resource management, you play a lot of cards in order to get effects, and the order you play the cards in might matter, but you don't need to play this card over to the left of playing it over to this card.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are some games where you do that, so I think that could classify as a city-building game if the position of the cards actually matters. But mm-hmm. I think a city-building game needs some sort of positional importance into it.
Yeah, that's just what I was about to say, that geometry and positioning are relevant when I think of the definition of a city building game.
Civ building games also seem to have a sense of history and growth to them. They mm-hmm. they start from a point of resource competition, then your civ develops a bit more. I think that's the aspect of it that I like in civ building games, is that you develop and you often conflict with other players in civ building games for territory or resources or points or something. Whereas in city games, you just build. You build, yeah. You maintain, you manage, you efficiency. Whereas in Civ, you sort of want to grow and sprawl and increase technologies and things like that. Does anyone have any other city building games they want to throw out?
I own Sunrise City. It is an interesting little city building game.
It is.
You're pretty much playing vertical dominoes because each tile is split in half between different colors. And I think there's five colors in the game. And you can only build upwards if the color of the tile is laid over the same color tile in the previous level, and you get better points if you can build vertical. It's odd. It's really light. I think it's easy to find in the store. I think what attracted me to it is probably the heaviest game I own. It is insanely heavy because the tiles are...
Weight-wise.
Purely weight-wise. The tiles are probably a good quarter of an inch thick. And they're really big,
very
and there's
chunky.
About 70 of them in the box. Like it is a heavy box just full of these really heavy tiles, and that was just
right.
Interesting. But the game is weird. I think if you have a store that you could go rent or demo the game,
yeah.
It could be worth it for a quick period of time. But I don't know if I'd recommend buying it.
I want to throw out Honshu, which is a tiny little card game that I heard about at Gen Con or Origins last year, but It plays really quickly, really simply. It's a very distilled card-laying city game where you have to cover up and, like Quadropolis and Suburbia, you score based on categories and placement. And I think for if you want a quick city builder that's really portable, I think it's great. The theme is weird. I don't know why it has an Asian theme slapped on top of it with strange artwork, but the game's pretty solid.
As much as I love city building, I don't really have anything else in here. I thought about saying Among the Stars, but that's kind of a, well, it's definitely a space station building game that isn't really a city. Thought about saying Seven Wonders, but that's more of a civilization building game than a city building game. I'm just going to say Santorini because I'm having fun playing it. Even though you are building a city in a very technical sense, you're not really having the same goals as a city building game. But go play Santorini. It's fun. It'll be a fun 10 minutes.
Carcassonne is a game involving city building. I played it about 10 years ago. I don't remember anything about it, but it is extremely prolific. So
it's fun. I
actually just got another Carcassonne expansion.
Oh, okay.
Really? Oh, I want to play that sometime.
We just like to collect them because they're cute.
So a lot of what we talked about today was different complexity levels between Suburbia and Quadropolis.
And within Quadropolis itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that we all consider whenever we're bringing a game to a table, and anyone that is interested in making sure all their friends have fun should always consider
yes.
Whenever they're bringing the game to the table. You don't want to be that person that is trying to shove the super heavy Euro down someone's throat when they have, maybe this is their second time at game night.
Well, I think that applies to pretty much any kind of game too. Like ideally, if you're bringing a new game to a group, and it's something you really like and you're really passionate about, you wanna make sure that they like it too, so that you have people to play with. It's not like I don't really have a good comparison. If the whole point is to have a shared experience and you want to have future shared experiences with people, it's good to try to get in on their level so mm-hmm. that they can actually enjoy it and you can have more of these experiences.
I have one friend, and he'll know exactly who he is, who if he has a bad time playing a game the first time, and he'll never play it again. And he's very vocal about it. We'll never play it again. You can't even try to be like, hey, that was a non-representative of that game. So I'm always really cognizant of like, is this the right level of game for this person? And I think it's really important if you are hosting a game night or just in trying to make a fun table experience, is making sure everyone at the table is on the same gaming level. And I think you can push people a little bit higher than their gaming level, but you can't push the lowest level gamer to the level of the highest gamer.
That's fair.
To make it acceptable and challenging for the highest level gamer. Like, you have to kind of get in the average at everyone at the table to make it fun for everyone.
Do you think the inverse of that is true? Do you think that if you are a more experienced gamer who's used to playing heavier games, do you always choose the heavy option in a category, or are there times when it's better to choose the light option?
If everyone at the table is cool with picking the heavier option, I'll probably pick the heavier option. But I personally have no problem jumping down to a lighter version of a game if it means that collectively at the table people are going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I think sometimes I don't feel for a heavy game. Sometimes I just want a simple hour experience with friends and not have to brain burn as much. Sometimes I really feel in the mood for it, and sometimes I don't. So I won't say I think the highest person can't play at the lowest person's level game and still enjoy themselves if they're in the mood for it. If you're really wanting to play a thinky game with other experienced gamers, nothing's going to satisfy that itch just by playing a couple filler games.
There's something I want to distinguish really quick, and that is, like, we're talking about not difficulty, but complexity. So we're not talking about, if we're playing Forbidden Island, having the thing where, like, it tsunamis on you right away, because that doesn't actually make the game any more complex. It just means you lose faster.
Right.
What we're talking about is, for a lot of games, it's, do we add in this expansion, or we do like the quick launch versus letting everybody choose their starting set of tricks for whatever game? I just think that that's an important distinction to make. So a sad fact of the matter is that usually games are not balanced perfectly. They're usually not playtested to death before they get out. And sometimes they are. Sometimes you have a labor of love where the author has taken really good feedback over the course of years and you have something that's this masterpiece at the very end. But often there's a situation where there are tacked on mechanics that are usually, rightly, I think, divorced from the body of the game by being put in as an optional rule, as a higher difficulty level, or as an expansion. And I think that it usually pays to be kind of discerning. And usually I don't want every expansion to be used or every weird mechanic, every weird optional rule to be in there. I think it's usually better to be a little bit discerning. And so I will almost never want the highest level of complexity.
See, I think that's one of my flaws because I always want the highest level. I want to play the game with all 8 expansions, and if I can get some promo cards too, I want those in. And I think that is, especially when someone takes one of my games off the shelf to teach it to someone else, and they have to open the box and sift through like, oh, you have 3 expansions already mixed in here. What do I do? How do I teach this? And I think that's kind of something I need to work on with myself and with my organization level, because not everyone wants that.
And Aaron, it's something that's kind of interesting with, I want to use Twilight Imperium as a specific example, because that is a game that starts out incredibly complex.
I think we almost made it through an episode without talking about Twilight Imperium.
It's going to come out. It starts out incredibly complex.
Josh is going to know everything about Twilight Imperium by the end of this without ever having to play it.
The old stuff you guys talk about, never.
I will hold you to it.
That's fine.
It is at minimum 6 hours long. It's a gigantic experience. So Aaron has had to pretty carefully curate for every time we've played. Like, it takes a lot of arrangement, and we kind of figure out how do we do it, how do we want to draft, all that other stuff. One thing that I've been pushing on Aaron pretty much since the first time that we played as a group was to curate the actions deck, because it is a gigantic deck of cards. You cannot possibly, without a motorized shuffler, do a good job of actually shuffling them. And they are all over the place as far as power level goes. Now, the core set of cards was not super well balanced to begin with. And some of the expansion cards are really interesting and some of them are really crazy. And it's just a bad balance. I think that one of the advantages of playing with the same group of people over and over again is that you can kind of curate, you can sort of prune away a game's rough edges. And Twilight Imperium is a great example of that, because it would really benefit from sitting down ahead of time and being like, you know what, these 90 action cards work really well together. Let's get rid of the other 90.
There's actually a ton of people on the internet that have said, use this deck.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's
a good idea. And I think you could curate the deck in different ways to make different gaming experiences. That if you know your table is less conflict heavy, do this. If you know your table is more conflict heavy, do this.
Yeah.
As opposed to being a player where you've been playing for 4 hours, not conflict heavy, and then all of a sudden your whole hand of cards is conflict, and you're like, my hand's dead.
That's my fear, is that if I start toying with it and like creating my own variant, that I'm going to like destroy the balance of the game.
I think it helps kind of realizing some games are better at this than others, but like what the level of precision and in the balance is to begin with. There's a new edition of Warhammer 40,000, and I will really rein myself in on this segue, but there are a lot of optional rules in it for the first time. There's always been like bolt-on things, but one of the things that the designers in this new edition have tried to do is make it so that it is approachable, because the game had gotten really bloated and unapproachable before. I think that that is a good instinct in a lot of board games. I think that, like, Sudo is another game that I play a lot. I really like. There are a couple of optional rules in there. There are a couple of core rules in there. And playing it with the same people and over and over again, and I might be repeating myself here, helps figure out what special rules are appropriate and what aren't. And also let you know, like, if I'm playing with, and this is not a specific example, but if I'm playing Sudo with Josh, maybe I don't do, I don't remember any of the special rules off the top of my head.
So with Quadropolis, they have the 2 different modes. Do you like it when games do that? Or would you rather have 2 similar games of different weight? This game is specifically built to this weight. This game is specifically built to this weight. Or do you like it better when a game tries to have that variability within it?
If a game can integrate it well, like I think Quadropolis is, both are wonderful games, then yeah, I'd much rather have it that way. Been playing a lot of Santorini lately. There are 4 ways to play that game that are completely distinct ways, and I think they each offer something different. And I like that because you get to try each way. You figure out which ways you like, which ways you don't. And because they all work, it's like getting four games in one instead of having four different chess-like moving games with different sets of rules.
I think I might be the opposite. I like games to be like finely machined and balanced to a T. I agree with you that I think that Quadropolis did a great job of coming up with two distinct and well-balanced sets of rules. What I don't like is, what's that game we got recently where there's like one player's the cave, one's the dragon, one's the thief?
Vast.
It's a great game. What I don't like is when a game says, here are five different sliders, tweak to fit, and then kind of just throws it all at you. I want games that are further along in terms of the balance and the playtesting. And I generally don't like it when the developers just kind of throw up their hands and say, well, here's a way you can make it harder. Here's a way you can make it easier.
I own Fresco. There are 12 modules in Fresco because I bought the big box and I love it. And one day I would like to play with all 12 modules on the table.
I think
it's going to be kind of awful because it's going to be too much stuff. However, I love that each module works with each other module. So depending on what day it is, you're like, I really want to play this module with this module because why not? And you just kind of go with what mood strikes you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I would never want to play every time with every single module.
And if you're assembling, if you're doing it the other way of picking the game and then trying to pick the group for the level of complexity, I'm your man for that high complexity game.
Another new addition we got recently was Stop Thief. And I really like that Stop Thief has a difficulty scale in it so that you kind of start with the early things while you learn the rules and then you add in what you want to do. I think that's kind of clever. Mm-hmm. It keeps the game fresh enough for players who are more experienced and lets you adjust it for those players that aren't. And that breathes a little more life into a game.
It makes the game more versatile.
Yeah.
So you're not just using it in very specific situations.
Does anyone have any final thoughts on choosing the level of complexity for your group?
I think you can keep in mind going both ways with it. I think you can pick a game to fit the people that are playing. Or if you have a lot of people to pick from, you can say, I want to table this game and invite the friends that can fit that game. If you have a larger circle of friends and can tailor who's playing the game, if you really want to table that game.
Tailoring your group feels really nice sometimes. I feel like I have the best play experiences with tailored groups often.
I agree.
I would also say if you're hosting a game or if you're the person who has, for whatever reason, the most influence on the level of complexity and you're the one who's asking for other people's input, make sure that you like your own level of complexity. Because if you just arbitrarily pick something that you think everybody is right for everybody else, but it isn't right for you, that's probably not a good way to start out. It should be a level of complexity that you personally enjoy, because if you're sharing this with other people for the first time, especially, like, you need to make sure that they're capable of enjoying it too, but you being engaged is probably the most important thing.
I think that even just goes bigger. I mean, if you're going to teach a game for any reason,
you should like it.
You need to like it because you're the one teaching it. You need to know the rules. You need to be engaged and be able to keep other people engaged. Never teach a game because you think other people are going to like it.
It's irresponsible.
It is.
Yeah, it is irresponsible.
If there's one thing Men on Board is about, it's responsibility. All right, I think we're going to wrap it up here. Please come back in 2 weeks when our category is going to be cooperative horror games. We're going to be about a couple days late from Halloween, but hopefully everyone's still in the cooperative horror mood. We're going to talk about A Trail at House on the Hill, as well as Dead of Winter. And then we are going to have a broad review discussion about flawed games that we love. But yeah, that's going to wrap it up for us. Our music, as always, is brought to you by Delicious Pastries, a local band here in Pittsburgh. If you'd like to email us, you can reach us at menonboardpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook as well as Instagram at menonboardpodcast. And find us on Twitter at menonboardpod. And you can find our guild on BoardGameGeek at Men on Board Podcast. Finally, our website is www.menonboardpodcast.com. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Night, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.
You made me completely.
Sorry, I totally forgot we still had this segment.
Why was that as
funny as it was? Totally forgot we still had this thing to talk about. I was like, we're done, right?
And I was like, why are you?